Welcome to the Wise Women Diaries podcast. This is where shame and victimhood die. I am a woman that questions everything, so this podcast is a reflection of that. Here we speak on non-mainstream perspectives, like healing our childhood wounds, learning to trust ourselves, the voice of fear versus intuition, and how children are our teachers. We discuss what it looks like to own your power as a woman and step out of the medical paradigm. That's why I am obsessed with interviewing women who trust their bodies and babies in home birth and free birth, and their wild journey from maiden to mother. Ultimately, this podcast is for women who want to thrive and have inner peace, learning how to take radical responsibility for their life and shed victimhood for good.
Hi, my name is Britta, and a little bit about me. I have been guided so closely by the stars for the past decade or so, and so I'll share my sun sign, which is Gemini, which really gives me very multi-layered, dynamic personality. My moon is in Scorpio, which is also conjunct exact Pluto and Lilith, which gives me depth and like the just drive to consistently transform and witness the transformation in others. And my rising sign is in Virgo. So this brings me into herbs, witchiness, spells, all this kind of a thing. So I say my energy is like a deer. I need to be in the forest. I am deeply sensitive and highly aware, but also a bit prone to fear and sensitive to my surroundings. So kind of a blessing and a curse there. So I'm a mother of two, a five-year-old and a three-year-old. I'm an intuitive somatic healer, an energetic healer, a doula, and a therapist. So I wanted to share my story today about really like how my life healing journey has informed the gifts that I now bring into the world, how I view kind of my pain and view this transformation from your core wound into your core gift. So I would say I grew up as a young girl. I characterize it now as a lot of confusion. I lived in a suburban white area in a very, very close-knit neighborhood. And I think at the time, my gifts were just a little bit unseen. Around early elementary school, just started becoming like chronically ill. This was like always sick with strep throat, always having stomach aches, things like this. And it didn't really make sense. It didn't really add up. And it wasn't like it didn't really seem like it was happening to everyone around me either. Pretty early on, I started to feel kind of different in that way. I also felt a lot in school like my intelligence set me apart. So it was always kind of in these like separate groups, which was special in a way. But I kind of always felt like I was ahead of the beat. What I remember about becoming sick was fantasizing that I would just have cancer and someone would come and just like save me. Or I would have like a broken bone, and which I've never had a broken bone, but I would dream and pretend and play that I would be hurt so that somebody would kind of validate my pain, I think, in hindsight is what I see. This went on and we, you know, had gone to doctors, but I was missing school and just kind of struggling. And it really, you know, ended up just growing and growing into my teen years and really evolving into really intense social anxiety in my middle school years, and therefore then also a lot of substance use. I think there was a lot of confusion there because everything on the outside just really looked quite nice. You know, I was like intelligent and pretty and everything that my community expected me to be, I was fitting into that. Even though on the inside, I really always felt like an outsider. Really unseen. And clearly now when I look back on all that, like physical sickness, just in so much pain, and not really having a way to communicate that. So the way that I see it now, it's like I was having chronic strep throat. So chronic strep throat, meaning like your throat is where you express, you know, and I couldn't speak my truth. I couldn't get out there what I really needed. I couldn't ask for what I needed. And I really didn't have that safety to like shake things up. I think a lot of pressure and expectation was on me to just kind of be the cute, easy one. Also a lot of stomach aches. So stomach aches in like the somatic healing world, we're looking at unable to digest your current reality, unable to receive nurturing love. And yet when you like look at on the outside, it looked like there was a lot of love there. You know, my family system, my grandparents were around and present. My parents raised me with my two brothers. And we were like most white middle-class families, you know, going to church, doing everything you're supposed to do. But I think I was really confused when I look back at the story because my mother's way of coping with my challenges was actually to just withdraw. So she would kind of pull back. Like if I was having a challenging time, it was like she would just kind of disappear or take things very personally. And then I felt like, okay, well, I got to keep the peace here. I can't really shake things up. So it's not like I was being like yelled at or deeply punished. I was actually given a lot of freedom, but maybe not the way that I needed. I ended up really coping by just like forcing everything inward. This looked like insomnia, so staying up late night after night. And the thing that's interesting is I feel like so many of these things are so normalized. And I really do want to speak to that too, because especially at the time, and maybe that's shifting a little bit now, but things like having a stomach ache, a young girl having anxiety, you know, is kind of just like, oh, well, that's our world, you know, that's our world. And not really given the attention I feel children really need. And I was, you know, basically not able to speak my truth, but also not able to rest, like up at night, every single night. Maybe I was reading, maybe I was playing with eyeshadow and straightening my hair, like God knows what I was doing. But I also couldn't ever really rest and integrate kind of what was going on for me. This is kind of like my childhood, you know. I definitely think I envisioned myself as kind of an outsider, but not, and no one ever kind of affirming that for me, you know, and saying like, yeah, you are unique, or you, I see you in this way or that way. It was kind of like, yeah, you fit into the pack and that's good. And then when I tried to fit into the pack, it was very, very painful. I was bullied intensely in middle school. This was the days of AOL Instant Messenger. I can't even fathom what teens go through now. By about age 12, was smoking weed consistently. That became, I think, my way of, I do think in some ways I was wanting to connect with nature. Like I've always thought of it as like, oh, this is like a natural herb remedy type thing. But it really masked the social anxiety and pain that I was in my family. And for many years, like, despite my family really knowing that I was drinking and smoking weed and stuff, never really got much intervention. Like nobody's stepping in.
I'm wondering, with your experience with cannabis at that age and that consistently, if you think that a lot of people use it in that way very consistently, like every day, to regulate their nervous system in the only way they know how.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like cannabis, from what I understand, like from a healer perspective, actually represses a lot of anger and kind of, yeah, turns you back inward in a way, right? And it can serve various purposes. I think there's, like I said, there are ways where it can be incredibly medicinal or turning you back into nature. But I think the chronic abuse of cannabis is very much masking that social or sorry, emotional expression that wants to come through. And that was very much true for me. Like I just did not feel like I was in a safe position to actually express what I was feeling, whether in a friendship, to my parents, to my family, to my community, like in every single way, I was just like, this is my only outlet to keep going, sort of, to cope. And the environment I grew up in was very much like party-centric. You know, it was a giant high school where partying is just the norm and people come to school on substances regularly, and that's very much embraced. And my parents went to that high school, my aunts and uncles went to that high school. Like, it was very much baked in and embedded in the social fabric. Like, yeah, party. Like, yeah, to a degree that is just wild to me now to understand, like, how endorsed those behaviors were. Yeah, and I think, like, there were so many gifts for me along the way where, like, I would have these moments where I would have a friend, you know, from a class who wasn't in that partying popular group who could see me. Somebody who could actually reflect and mirror back to me my own depth, my own wisdom, or just the fact that just, like, my truth of kind of being outside of the mainstream. And I'm so grateful for those moments that when I kind of later came into my deeper healing process, they were kind of like these glimmers of like, it's always been there. Yeah. And I think in those years, it just really snowballed from middle into high school. High school was a season of incredible amounts of partying, never going to school, just a complete lack of my own recognition of my own needs. And also, like, no adults stepping in and saying, hey, try this counseling or just literally anything to try to intervene. My family at the time were very, like, as my mom describes it, like laissez-faire, kind of just like learn your own way, deal with natural consequences. And my natural consequences came about incredibly harshly. It was my senior year of high school. I had had multiple physical injuries due to partying, like severe physical injuries, like frostbite on my feet and a severe concussion that I didn't even get treatment for. I mean, it was just so much to the degree that it was that I think there was this repressed collective shame around what was really going on in our social groups that none of the parents wanted to admit, and not even my own could really step in and intervene. So I left high school in like a shroud of embarrassment and shame from having like publicly been injured while partying. And it was awful. And I was like forced to apologize for it. You know, so again, it was kind of like me as the young person. I mean, at this time, I was only 17. You know, I wasn't even an adult yet. Yeah. And so I think it was, again, very confusing, you know, rather than like, are you okay? What do you need? Like this show of caring support. It was very much like, we're going to pretend this isn't happening. And we're going to hide away. And when you need us the most, we won't be there. You know, I think this did really alchemize my next season of life because I went into college being like, I'm done. I am done with this dynamic of partying and acting like a child. Like I had, you know, maybe some really immature moments still in college, but I feel like by then I was already stepping toward my recovery in some ways. I went out of state to school, so I had a little bit of distance. And, you know, I think spent those years in my 20s trying to compensate by being of service. You know, I studied social work and steeped myself deeply into like revolutionary movements and helping people in all various different types of communities, refugee women and things like this. So I think in those years, I was just kind of like, okay, I'm going to cruise along. Didn't really know where it was going to take me. But it was really in the years leading up to having babies where I was starting to really get signals from the universe like, hey, you really need to unearth how you were raised. You really need to take a closer look at this. And I think in my 20s, I was still really repressing my feelings, smoking a lot of cannabis still, you know, kind of casually drinking, this kind of a thing, which again is just very normalized, that I think we should be questioning why it's so normal, rather so common. So in my 20s, I was married to the man of my dreams. Thank goodness I had met a really, really beautiful, wise, and creative man that could really see me and hold the depth of my pain and intensity. We met when we were 19. We dated for 3 years in long distance, and then were married quite young and wanted to just enjoy being married. When I became pregnant with our first baby, I was 27. I think that at that time was when I really recognized the wounding that I had. I really started to see and witness, like, hey, in the times when I need like deep emotional support, there was really nobody there. If I needed somebody to like, you know, buy me fancy gifts, yeah, I had, you know, love being given to me and shown in a certain way, but it's the way of society. It's the way of materialism. And I think I just felt that that was just not meeting my needs, and really began at that point to set boundaries with family around like creating my safe zone for giving birth ultimately. And I kind of became a freak. At this time, I had already been trained as a doula, so I thought I knew everything. And I did have a lot of wisdom, was working in maternal mental health, and ended up, you know, really searching inward at that time. Like, what is birth really about? I feel like at that time was really when a lot of, like, I would say ancestral knowledge was starting to awaken within me. Like, nobody from the outside was telling me, here, think about a home birth. Here, try this. Like, it was very much this like inner searching where I was like, something doesn't feel right to me about my mom's birth story, my grandmother's birth stories. You know, there actually is quite a long lineage of traumatic birth on both sides of my parents' families. And as I'm exploring and looking at this, I'm just thinking there's got to be a different way. And I started, you know, putting together my own birth team. I started out meeting with like midwives in a hospital, which I think is where like a lot of people start. They're like, okay, I want a midwife. Maybe not recognizing that midwives in a hospital are just, they are replicating the same harm that anyone working in a hospital can. And immediately just felt like my stomach was sinking at every appointment. I wasn't being cared about. You know, they say, oh, we want to rotate you through all the midwives, aka you're not going to have a personal relationship with anyone. You know, or if I, you know, they're hyper-focused on the amount of weight I was gaining. You know, things like this where I'm just like, nobody is even asking me how I'm feeling or able to just impart wisdom in this time that I don't yet know I need, but should be kind of that wise woman wisdom, you know, that you, I feel that that's what you want from a midwife. I'm trying to remember exactly what happened, but at about 34 weeks, like the shit hit the fan with my midwives. They had, I think, scared me from some finding on a test that I just like intuitively knew was like not something to be concerned about. And it was just the straw that broke the camel's back. And at 34 weeks, I just exploded everything. And I said, I'm going to find a home birth midwife. I don't care. I'm not waiting until subsequent birth to have a home birth. And in 2018, I did not know anyone who was doing that. There was no precedent set for me. I also didn't have any friends who were having children. I was like really kind of first through the wall. The response from my family was very it's, I think in these moments, especially like, I feel like birth is just so alchemical. It's like, it just shows you the truth, whether you want to see it or not, you know? And that lack of support that I got was alarming. And, you know, apart from just lack of support, like people were sending me horror stories and trying to talk me out of it. My own mother saying, you're going to hemorrhage and have to be helicopter lifted, you know, weeks before I'm giving birth. It was what I understand now, just like a huge projection of fear, because my mom didn't get to give birth in the way that she wanted to. Like her first birth was an emergency C-section. And I knew that. That wasn't me. That was my brother. But, you know, it was like I'm seeing the ways that in our lineages we're starting, like how this repressed pain comes out in just replicating more pain. So at that time, I just basically had, for the first time, truly set boundaries. Was like, don't talk to me about this again. Don't come to my birth. You know, like, this is what I'm doing and I really don't care. And I think it was so powerful because, and I think it's an opportunity a lot of women don't get, is like I really activated my own inner maternal power in that moment and said, yes, this is what I know I need. I know my baby knows how to be born, everything. And I had done everything under the sun to prepare for this birth, you know, hypnobirthing and orgasmic birthing, all the holistic healing things, which again, I kind of just sought them out myself. Nobody was telling me. I was searching, this is my Gemini, right? I was able to just find every informational source to just cherry pick all these little pieces and put them all together in my own birthing process. And I had a doula who was lovely, and yet maybe just not that wise woman activation, you know? I always tend to feel in my life, I'm the one activating everyone, like my own midwife, my own mother, my own, like, you know, that's just kind of how I show up in the world. So the other thing I did that was super important was I used the emotional freedom technique to really separate myself from my mom's birth story and from the horror stories that people were trying to scare me with. And that's like, for people who don't know, it's like tapping on different acupressure points with like an unconditional self-love mantra to, yeah, just kind of restory. And again, I feel like that was probably the first time where I had even considered stepping into my own unconditional self-love. Pretty powerful moment. And the way that my firstborn came into the world was in our home, in our apartment, like just fast and furious. My waters broke. I gave birth at home on our couch in the most like naked, screaming, carnal woman way. It was a 3.5 hour long birth. So fast and furious, like we had said to people, my water broke. And then it was like 2 hours later, we had like photos of him being born. So it was kind of this amazing moment of being like, I fucking told you so. Because I did. Like, I did the damn thing. And I don't necessarily recommend a fast labor. Like, it wasn't at all how I envisioned. Of like, you know, the birthing pool and there's the light. No. It was pure screaming until it was, the baby was on my chest, you know. And so I did it. Like, I had my home birth. I kind of proved everyone wrong that this is possible. And there began my, you know, motherhood portal, which was a huge, huge awakening beyond anything I could ever have imagined. I think at the time I thought, oh, okay, the things with my mom and everything that had come up and surfaced in my maternal lineage at that time, like, okay, well, I had the home birth. And I think a lot of pregnant people think that birth is like the end of the journey, when actually it's only the beginning. Yeah, once I had given birth to my firstborn, so many more alarms were going off around how I was raised, you know, my relationship with family, my relationship with my mother, her relationship with her mother, like, where is this all coming from? And really couldn't quite sort it out until after I became a mother. And it was like day after day, I'm trying to breastfeed and parent this tiny baby. And yet all I can think about was like the pain that I had felt for not having my own needs met. Really, like, all the way from pre-birth, like in the womb, all the way through like my, how I, you know, the stories that my mother told me about, like, yeah, we did cry it out with you, not your brothers, but with you. Ugh. You know, it was like this dagger with me. And now I'm here with my child. And again, surrounded just by only conventional wisdom of like, you need to get your baby on a sleep thing. But I just know it's so wrong. And I think that's a lot of what comes up for new mothers. And I see this a lot in the therapy room too. You're simultaneously like tapping into your intuition of what you know while like trying to heal the pain of what maybe you didn't get or what, how things went, or it's just, it's a huge heavy load. And I kind of just got flooded. It was just like all the chronic illnesses, all the strep throat, all the holding my truth back. And already also at this point for decades and decades of not sleeping and not getting rest, my burnout, you know, and I had been working as a social worker for the past 5 years. So I was just so burnt out and depleted upon the entrance into my motherhood. And then on the other side of motherhood, what I met with is, yay, you can drink with us again. Yay, come have a beer, you know, let's, you know, like, let's meet up for happy hour. You know, it's just, it's hard to even describe now what that really is, to be given, offered something that's just so opposite to what your needs are in the moment. But not just, it's like, yeah, my friends were that way, but it's also my mom, it's also my family, it's also, you know, it's like, all right, you're done with being pregnant, so back to drinking and repressing your feelings. And, you know, I do have compassion for it, because what were they given? You know, and I think in my healing journey, that's what I really discovered is like, you know, I think in any healing journey, you do need to go through at least a part, a stage of victim, of feeling the victim and really letting the gravity set in of like, I didn't have my needs met. I'm in pain from this. But once I really started sorting it through, you realize what were the women in my lineage offered themselves, you know, and it was the same thing, or maybe not the exact same thing, but probably not what they needed either. So after having my firstborn, you know, I really kind of dedicated myself to like solving the puzzle. I was like, what is this? What's here? And interestingly, at that time, my husband and I, so we had been married and had our firstborn in Denver, Colorado, where all my family is. And we decided super impulsively to just pack up everything and move to Seattle and take on this incredible career opportunity for my husband. It's kind of funny. I think subconsciously at the time, my system was like, you need separation. Like, you need to go and figure out what this all means. And you're not going to be able to do it in your family's backyard right now in a way that's meaningful. So we went to Seattle, and at that time was when I think I had the safety in my system and the distance to really let it all land. That's when I really started into years long of grieving, searching for healing, a lot of anger, a lot of separation, and again, like for the first time, boundary setting. So in that process, I found a therapist who did somatic healing. And, you know, I'm also a therapist. So it was a huge awakening into like what is stored in the body, how birth breastfeeding, parenting is such an embodied act, and how conveniently we are separated from our bodies. And I think we see that a lot with substances. It's just a great way to put distance between your mind and your body. So I really moved myself back into my body into a way where I was able to access a lot of subconscious memory that I had repressed. I was that classic case that I see as a therapist so often when people say, oh, I don't really remember that much in my childhood. Okay. Yeah. So you've repressed is what that means, you know? And it was very intense to unearth kind of one by one all of these memories that all just like validated kind of what was my worst fear, which would be like separating me from my family, when I think the other thing that's important to note is like that's what I value most is healing and families. Seattle is a very different cultural space than where I grew up. And so I was also immersed in the community of therapists, where the advice at the time, this is like 2019, is like, if you have toxic family, cut them off. Go no contact. End it. End your relationship. What, you don't need them anymore. You just really this like hyper-individualist, I think kind of white supremacy therapy culture. It's like, there's no other alternative conceivable than just going out on your own, riding solo. And I see that a lot in Seattle. Like, so many people live far away from their families. Maybe they're not connected at all with their families anymore. And that, I think, just gutted me. I think at the time I was just like, I felt it was my only option I was being given. It was like, if you're going to heal and feel better, and you don't want to be triggered anymore, then you just need to not have your family in your life and not have them in your kids' life. When I think when you're a parent, the thing you need most is like robust support. So it was a very challenging space to be in. It was in Seattle where I then got pregnant with my second. So fast forward, you know, a pandemic shutdown, which Seattle again was like the first to shut down. It was a very intense environment to experience that. We just thought, well, we're not doing anything else. Let's just have our second baby. And saw a couple of deer on an island with my firstborn. And then sure enough, conceived like immediately after that. So deer have always made their appearance into all of my conception stories. By the time I was like pregnant with my second born, I think I just had my walls up so high. I was so afraid, you know, with the pandemic and the lockdowns, with kind of unearthing family trauma. I was just like, I can't let anyone in. It's just not safe. A lot of stress in the body, stress in the system. And yet I was planning to have another home birth. Like, that was a surefire thing for me. Yet feeling probably more alone and isolated than I had ever really felt. Just no one even saw me pregnant. And, you know, it was like I just stayed home and got on a computer and gave therapy to other people all day long. I think at that point, just very afraid. Like, how am I going to integrate my family into this? How am I going to tell them that they can't be part of this when that's not really what my intuition was telling me? In the preparation for this birth, I did everything, you know, similar to I had before, with all the hypnobirthing and a doula and a home birth midwife. As I was doing all of this, this is where I feel like a lot of my healing journey has guided me back inward. It's like I could just tell that my baby was probably not going to come on her due date. Like, she was due to be in Aries on April 2nd, which was my best friend's birthday. And I just knew all along, I was like, no. This is not an Aries baby. Like, she just has such a different energy, and was extremely tapped into this. And yet, I think at the time, I still just didn't trust myself to voice my intuitions fully. I was kind of still on that like journey of that reemerging. So I didn't tell my midwife or my doula or even my husband. I was like, we'll just see. what happens. And then sure enough, which I feel happens often, like 34 weeks, I had kind of a scare where I was starting to have back-to-back contractions. They weren't Braxton Hicks. I called my midwife. She's like, if they don't stop within the hour, I think we need to go in. Well, they did stop. But I find this happens a lot with birth, especially like an unusual birth that requires more intervention, that there can tend to be these kind of like interesting markers where you're like, this is strange, you know, this is not tracking the path to normal. And I think the best check of that is always the mother's intuition, usually knowing like this isn't typical. And then a week later at 35 weeks, I couldn't sleep one morning and decided to just do all my hypnobirthing and visualization. And I'm trying to visualize giving birth in my house, and I just never could. Like, I just never could. I would try to picture my doula like walking through the door. Nope, just blank. I just remember laying in my bed just like, damn it. Like, what is happening? And I literally get up to go pee and waters break. And I was like, okay, we're having a baby today. You know, for somebody who's very much against the over-medicalized birthing system, I felt so calm and so assured that everything was going to be just fine. My midwife came over and like helped me get in the car and was so sweet and just nurturing in that moment, like right when I needed it. We went to the hospital. And I just knew, again, intuitively, and I think this is why I just feel like nothing is an accident, you know, because I don't know that I would have been connected to this intuition had I not been just doing this deep healing excavation for the past 2.5 years. And I was just like, okay, she's going to be born today. She's going to be completely fine, and she's not going to be in the NICU. And I was like so, so committed to that outcome. So when we get to the hospital, we're talking to the midwife. And again, this is, I think, just like a perfect picture of hospital midwives. I wasn't really having many contractions because I have a lot of body control. Like, I was able to kind of just keep them slow. My midwife was like, well, you're not really having many contractions. But the good thing is I'll be here for the next 24 hours. And if you need Pitocin, we could start that pretty soon. So before I've even had a real contraction, she's already trying to propose interventions to me. And which, thank God, I'm just a rebel, because I'm just like, if you even try to come at me with that, like that is the literal opposite. Like, that would literally never happen in my scenario. And I told her that. I said, that's not going to happen. I give birth very quickly. I know my body. I am so connected because I have now done literally years of somatic body engagement and breath work and all this kind of a thing. Sure enough, I get into the tub at the hospital, little bit of nipple stimulation, little orgasmic birth movement, and that baby was born an hour and a half. And these women had gone on their lunch break. And so they're getting called back in the room. And the baby's crowning, and you can see in the video, it is upsetting in ways, because you can just see their coercion. They're just trying so hard to control the situation. I'm just like, not to be controlled. Do not give a fuck at all. I'm on my knees, like kind of on the bed, and they're like, we need to get a monitor onto her, and we need this, and Britta, you need to turn over, and you know, 100 commands being barked at me. And of course they're bringing the NICU team up, and I'm pissed. I'm just like, don't even bother me with the NICU team, because I know I'm not going to need it. But I think that's what a lot of women don't realize, that they can actually advocate for those things. So my baby comes out, she's born, she's looking great, like a little stunned maybe. She was born very fast. You know, I can just tell she's perfectly fine. She's breathing. She's not struggling. But what happens in the system is that they just want to intervene, even though it's a subconscious thing, you know, like They just are like, okay, we're a NICU team. And so when we see a preemie, we believe that they should go into the NICU. Like, it's just this automatic thing. So you can see it play out in the birth video where they're just trying to get her away from me over to the NICU team. And I keep saying, no, no, no. And then the other thing that's happening is they're starting to scare my husband, you know? So then now he's like, Britta, we need to do what they're telling us to do, is basically what he says. And I'm just like, you can look at her, but she's not going to the NICU. And they take her for a moment to, I don't even know. The funny thing is, what are they even doing? She's not, there's nothing wrong. There's video. They're just rubbing her with a blanket. I'm like, what is even happening? They're not resuscitating her. Like, what could possibly she need more than to be with me? And so the whole time you can hear me in the background. Okay, how's she doing? Are you bringing her back over to me? Are you bringing her back over to me? When is she coming back over to my skin? You know, because at this point also, I've been through a healing journey. I know how to set boundaries. Like, I know how to say at this point what I want. Finally, they're like, okay, we can do a little skin to skin and we'll see how it goes and blah, blah, blah. So they put her on my skin. It's funny because I have a picture from right after and I'm literally just the biggest blissed out smile ever of them bringing her back to me. And they're like, wow, we have never seen this happen. Her ox level is going up. Her heart rate is looking better from her being on my chest. And I'm like, what do you mean you've never seen this? Like, to me, that's just shocking. I'm like, you've never tried to regulate the baby from being on their mother's body? Like, even if they're a preemie, why, how are we missing this? In that moment, it was wild. And I, you know, I can be pretty fierce with my words. So again, I had like two big I told you so moments with that team, because I was like, I told you I would birth fast. And I told you she would not need to go to the NICU. And they really couldn't believe it, to the point where the rest of my hospital stay, even though my midwife told me she was staying on for the next 24 hours, she never came back to talk to me. Like, she was so ashamed, I think, of like being shown up and not, and like being unseated as the expert or something. I don't know. Like, I guess I don't want to like read into her story, but why she never came back is such a mystery to me. Like, she never came back in the room to check in. She sent a different midwife. It was weird. It was very strange. So the long story short is that, like, really for the next 48 hours of us being in the hospital, we had to fight minute to minute to keep our baby out of the NICU. Like, they just wanted to so badly, even though, like, none of the tests and statistics were showing that she needed to be. Like, they would say, you know, they're checking her glucose levels. That's one thing they look at preemies. And they're saying, well, here's the normal, the lowest level is like a 7. And she's at like a 7.5. So, you know, it might be better if we just take her down. And I'm like, that's not the low level. Like, no. Like, you said it needs to be above 7. It's above 7. I don't understand. No.
Just itching to get a baby away from its mom.
Itching. Yeah. Yeah. So we fought really hard to keep her in my arms, and she did have like jaundice level and like, what is the Coombs? It's like a blood incompatibility thing. So like, she didn't, it's not that she didn't need any treatment at all, which to me in hindsight is like, yeah, it's actually better we were in the hospital. We probably wouldn't have tested for those things. Those things are easily treatable for her staying with me. You know, there's nothing, there's no reason to separate a baby. Only reason a baby should need to be separated is like to be in an actual incubator, you know, and you don't need that. She is breathing and breastfeeding and everything. And yeah, so I think that story was, you know, its own kind of powerful whirlwind, I feel like, of giving birth early and what advocacy can really do. But I feel it also really connects me back into my healing journey, because like, after all of the intensity that I'd experienced in my healing, like the one person who was able to show up for me who I needed most was my mother, was my mom. Witnessing my daughter be born completely unexpectedly, and then like because of all the healing I had put in, my mom was able to show up for me and continue to like repair the relationship. It was just this massive moment, I feel, of like lineage healing. I could just tell that there was something like a seed planted for a bigger transformation to take place. Because at the time when my daughter was born, I wasn't really talking to my mom hardly at all. A little bit here and there, but I was kind of steeped in that no contact, you know, don't get triggered, don't get anything. And then she's born and she hops on a plane.
This is crazy because your first child removed your rose-colored glasses on your family dynamics and you woke up to like see what happened in your childhood and the reality of your family dynamics, and it woke you up to all that. But then your second child, the seed was planted for like healing and reconnection.
Yeah.
Children.
Exactly.
Children, they know what they're doing.
They do. And I think that's why like I feel this is also interconnected, because why would we interfere with the design of children, of these new souls having this deep wisdom of knowing how and when they're meant to be born? And I think for me too, like it would be so easy for me as an advocate, you know, against the extremism of the medical system to just be like, home birth's the only way. But then that wasn't my story either. I actually did have a hospital birth, and my baby, that girl, baby girl knew she needed to be born in that way. And this girl, like part of the lineage of my maternal lineage is like really, really deep spiritual women. So that's been part of the challenge in some ways, because my mom, she can just psychically get in my head. She didn't have to say anything. So I've had to have better psychic boundaries, you know? My daughter comes out, she's just like a seer. Like, you just get it. She just sees people. Everyone who sees her, it's like her eyes. And she just has this deep soul awareness that, yeah, really, I think, opened up a whole different possibility of how we could all heal. And it's happened, too, with, like, even my mom's mom. I was a couple months ago talking to my mom's mom, my Nana, and like telling her about how I let my baby girl sleep in my bed. Just a little anecdotal story. And she just was like, oh my goodness. I always wished that I could have done that for my babies. But I never felt like I could. She's like, I just felt like I had to follow the rules. So I would like make a bed on the floor, like, you know, she's like, but I knew it was wrong. She's like, I knew it wasn't into like right. But she's like, I just felt like that was the wisdom. That's what they tell you. Your baby needs to sleep alone. You know, and I think those moments that have just been so illuminating for me, that it's like, I think you could so easily just continue to just finger point and blame and just say, you hurt me and you didn't give me what you needed, but not realizing that those patterns start from a place of their own pain and their own ways of not being supported. The years after my second was born, I went to this training to be initiated as like a somatic healer, much deeper somatic healer process. And during that trip was when I actually had an embodied visual experience of all the pain from my maternal line that I'd been carrying in my body on a cellular level, and a huge release of that pain. So like when I was nursing my baby girl, I had massive, massive left wrist pain. So like so bad, like just couldn't figure it out. I did, you know, went to PT and did all this stuff, and it's my left hand, and the left side of the body is typically considered the feminine. And during that training and that healing experience I'd witnessed all the pain of my grandmother and then how that transferred to my mother and then how that transferred to me. And, you know, all subconsciously, right? Like, these aren't women that are trying to hurt me. These are the women who prayed for me. These are the women who I'm their wildest dream come true, but they can't get over their own pain. And once that pain had been released, it was actually in the point of my body behind my belly button. So the belly button's like a really, really powerful energetic healing point. Shocking, right? I mean, it makes sense. But it had this huge release in my body of alchemizing that pain on behalf of the women in my lineage. And then all the pain in my wrist started flowing out of my hand. And I could feel it all leaving me. And it just became so clear. I had been holding it back and trying to keep it from transferring onto my daughter. Like literally physically with my energy, holding it within me so that she wouldn't have to absorb it. And I feel like I've done to the degree that I can. I've been able to do that, you know, like it's not about perfection. And I have to remind myself, if it's like 7 generations back of pain, we're not going to undo all of that in only one go around, you know, but we can do a lot to excavate it. And I came back from Portugal from this training. And I mean, my mom and my nana and women in my family were saying things I had never heard them say and being more compassionate with themselves than I had ever seen. I mean, this is what we would call quantum healing, where you actually can, in the body, change the direction of how DNA is expressing and how our conscious, subconscious connections are wired together. And yeah, I've seen it. It's real. Again, it's can be messy. But yeah, that was incredibly powerful and has... yeah, also just informed the work that I do, where I just feel like I am now just on a mission to really, like, in various ways, support mothers with that intuitive ancient way of knowing, really guiding them back to their intuition, but also really tending to the mother wound. Because I think we're deceiving ourselves if we don't acknowledge that we are in a collective mother wound. And we see that playing out in the way that, like, we're treating our earth, for example, is like a huge obvious example where it's like, we feel separated, right? There's the separation that happens, like we're not connected somehow. And I'll be fine if I'm just on my own. I don't really need the resources of the mother to care for me. But that's never going to be true. That's just never, ever going to be true. Like, and across your whole lifespan and even beyond, like, we are in desperate need of the wisdom and the resources and the love of the mother.
Yeah, Mother Earth literally sustains us. And I don't think people think about this enough. Her water and her food and her animals sustain our survival. The mother is literally nourishing all of us to stay alive. And yeah. So many of us abuse her, don't thank her, have no reverence for her. It is so collective. I want you to speak on the mother wound and how you see it in women play out in the healing, because I think it's a huge conversation.
Yeah, I definitely see it like in various ways. I think many unsuspecting women, the way that it plays out, especially if they had like the good enough mother, like not an obvious pain, but like maybe just their needs weren't met on a simple level, is like the protector that comes up that doesn't really allow the woman to really actually mature from like the wounded child into the mother archetype, the woman who can take up space, who can ask for what she needs, who can truly trust her intuition and who is like highly valued for that. The protector kind of comes in and says like, kind of keeps you from ever feeling that pain. So I see that happen a lot. And again, this is very dynamic, like, and it's going to play out differently in different people's scenarios. But then I see women give birth and then all of a sudden they're shocked with the pain that they're kind of carrying very deeply subconsciously. So, and the protector usually plays out, I think, in a lot of women being the pleaser, being the good girl. Like, not trying to shake things up. So if we're looking at the birthing world, which is where I'm working, like, it's saying, yeah, I don't want to shake things up. I don't want to disrupt the tradition of us all having highly medicalized births, or I was formula fed. So, but like things like that, like, I think another huge example of a mother wound that is not discussed is just the number of people who were formula fed. This is like a really early wound. And we don't need to, like, you know, there's a balance between, like, accountability for mothers and having done that, and also, like, breaking free of that, the victim kind of stereotype that, like, you didn't really have options or you couldn't do it, you know? So I think a lot of people are actually grieving really early things like that.
Yeah, baby being denied their rightful place at the breast when they're a mammal, and their rightful place of what is just the minimum need of that mammal is the breast. And that's denied, you know, whether the mother thought she was doing the really the right thing, because the doctor, you know, is saying, you know, in the 60s or whatever era, breastfeeding was really shunned and it was like looked at as dirty. And so a lot of mothers, you know, thought they were doing the best thing. A lot of babies were denied their rightful place at the breast. And that is a primal mother wound.
Yeah. These pre-verbal things, or even just like sleep and separation during sleep, you know? And I think what I mean when I say like the protector is that because, like, many mothers weren't trying to be malicious in doing that, right? But then the protector comes in and says, well, but then we can't do any better. We're just going to let it be, you know? Or people aren't really given their full depth of needing to maybe grieve that loss. I think grief is a huge part of the mother wound healing, yet very challenging. It's understandable why people avoid it. Because we're sold and packaged. Oh, when you have your first child, you should be in joy and bliss, and your kid should be dressed cute. Isn't that the most important thing, is that your child has cute clothes and that the mom, you know, can exercise again? It's like, well, maybe we need more. Maybe we need better. We do, right? Because we see evidence in our society. It's not working out the way we've done things.
I want to point out the mother wound that I've seen a lot when a daughter is trying to go with her own intuition, but a mother views it as, oh, you're trying to do better than me, and views it as a threat. And so the daughter can be a threat to the mother because she's doing it better than the mother. And it's a betrayal to the mother then. And it could be in so many ways, but it could be like really in childbirth. Or even breastfeeding, right? You know, a woman wanting a home birth and the mother had a traumatic birth. It's a betrayal. It, like, subconsciously, right? The mother doesn't understand what's happening in her body when she's so angry that her daughter is choosing a better option than her and trying to do better and trying to do better for the lineage. But it can be felt as this betrayal wound of, how could you be outshining me? And ooh, I see that a lot.
Yes. Yeah, it's so true. And I think it's a really sensitive space, because when you're pregnant and giving birth, you need to be mothered. There's just no way around it. Like, you need that mothering wise woman energy. And so to think of committing that betrayal, I think it really does keep people in their safe zones, in their protective zones, to where their nervous systems are really shut down. What it actually does is it puts people into anxiety or depression, which, again, highly normalized, even though it's not. It's not normal to be anxious every day, you know? And then we see those things, unfortunately, play out then with the babies, right? Like, that's just how those things get transmitted. And I think the important message is that you can turn the boat around. Pain can be alchemized into like really, really deep healing. Birth is really the portal, you know, for a better humanity, I think.
Yeah, I'm curious how you can describe your life now with being in so intimate relationship with your body and your emotions and who you are compared to the past.
Yeah. Yeah. Now my life has transformed radically. We moved back to Colorado. So after giving birth, the powerful thing I want to add is that actually my mother apologized to me, which really opened this door of saying, hey, like healing can really happen. And we want our children and families to all have a relationship together. And so we're back in Colorado. The biggest change I made, you know, is pranced up to the mountains because my nervous system and my sensitivity is like fully on board now. So I don't have anxiety anymore like I did. I mean, I just can't even believe that for 20 plus years, I just had anxiety every single day. And now I just don't. I feel things. I know from my third eye center, like what's true about things. The best, most powerful transformation I've had is just being able to feel the emotion in the moment of whatever is coming up. We know that emotions only last for like 3 seconds to 3 minutes. So like to really train my nervous system to do that has been a huge gift. So like when I cry, you know, again, moon in Scorpio, it can kind of be the ice queen a little bit. When I cry, it's like, yay, I did it. I did the thing. I really have seen it also play out with my children and their nervous systems. Like, because I'm not in a constant fight or flight stress response, my children like really don't get sick. I know people don't like to hear this, but they don't. When I hear people saying, oh, my kids are sick every other day, I'm like, yeah, it's probably stress. Like, I think we think about only germs, like the scientific side of things. So I'm sick less. I've healed years and years of chronic symptoms because after I gave birth both times, my frequent illness turned into chronic autoimmune symptoms. So now I work on an energetic level to tend to my symptoms, and it's better than any supplement or anything I've ever tried. I do I'm so heightened and sensitive to others' energy and like a lot of the psychic and collective wisdom. I really have to anchor into my body. So I do that with daily Qigong. That has been really, really powerful for me. Deep meditations and like guided embodiment work, you know, as a healer supporting this, I have to receive that type of healing a lot. I'm kind of always accessing that and just being in nature. Honestly, I think the most healing things are the most simple. And some of those big healer things are great to like open things up. And then now it's kind of the maintenance of just like, yeah, getting sunlight, getting outside.
I'm curious to wrap this up. This is going to be a big question, but I just like a big question to see what comes through for you in this moment. If a woman is listening and, you know, she's maybe just dipped her toe in learning who she is or the truth of her childhood, and she's like, oh my gosh, I have a lot of work to do. Like a lot, the road ahead is long and it can feel daunting, and then it can paralyze someone to even start. But what would you say to that person that knows there's a lot to do but is kind of paralyzed, kind of scared, but knows it has to be done?
I would just say, like, stay with yourself, woman, because you doing the healing is everything for this world. And she already knows. Like, it's already in there. That wisdom, that knowing. And if you can just stay with that flow little by little, that's the greatest resource, you know, is that inner wisdom. Yeah, it's a little bit at a time is okay. I've done things from like really, really wild, intense somatic healing ceremonies to really subtle energetic healing. And I think a lot of times for mothers, the more subtle things can be more powerful when you're not trying to flood yourself and overwhelm. Really simple, gentle awareness over a longer period of time can feel a lot more nourishing and sustainable because you're probably mothering already. and you need to be able to be present to that too. And not everyone can just take months away to integrate. The integration is essential. It's like how it's going to play out in your day-to-day life.